From NPR and WBUR Boston, I'm Meghna Chakrabarty in for Robin Young.
I'm Jeremy Hobson. It's Here and Now, and we will begin this hour with Syria. Today, the country's foreign minister is welcoming a Russian proposal to put Syria's chemical weapons under international control. Meanwhile, President Obama is giving interviews to six media outlets tonight, and tomorrow he'll speak directly to the American people from the Oval Office. In the past week, he and Secretary of State John Kerry have been making the case for a U.S. military strike on Syria. Today, the American people are hearing also from Syrian President Bashar al-Assad. In an interview with CBS News, Assad said American intervention in Syria could backfire.
This war is against the interests of the United States. Why? Because this is the war that's going to support al-Qaeda and the same people that kill Americans in the 11th of September.
Well, the question today really is, what will Congress do? Members of the House and Senate are back in Washington after a five-week break. The Senate will get right to work debating a resolution to authorize military action in Syria. And later this afternoon, Kerry, National Security Advisor Susan Rice, and Defense Secretary Chuck Hagel will address both the House and Senate in yet another push to convince congressional skeptics. Joining us now is NPR's Charlie Mathesian. Charlie, welcome.
Hi, Meghna.
Hi there. So we've got a lot of fence sitters in Congress right now. The administration needs 60 votes in the Senate, 217 in the House. And even though ranking Republicans and Democrats have backed the president's plan, Charlie, it doesn't seem like they're going to convince other members of the party, of their respective parties, I should say, to follow suit. So where does the debate go from here?
Well, in terms of the actual vote count in Congress, it looks pretty grim right now for the president. There might be enough votes in the Senate, but it's really an uphill battle in the House where there's considerable resistance. And that comes after a week of heavy administration lobbying. And so what we're hearing from many of the fence sitters is twofold. First, there's the public sentiment, which is that these members are reporting that their constituents are overwhelmingly opposed. But then there's the policy problem that many members have highlighted, which is that lots of members of Congress say that the administration just hasn't presented a case that's compelling or convincing enough to justify the use of force yet.
You know, as we mentioned, Speaker John Boehner and other top-ranking Republicans in the House came out in support of the president's plan for military action. What's at stake politically for them?
Well, for them, it's a little different than the rank-and-file members. There's an institutional aspect to their support that's different from your average members. While they're not obliged in any way to support the president on serious strikes, as top leaders of the House, they have a different level of responsibility than, say, your average rank-and-file member. And obviously, the politics of this aren't great for Speaker Boehner because it's already well known that he has a tenuous hold on the Republican conference, and he's in a very awkward position because of the strong opposition to military strikes within his caucus.
Now, what about on the Senate side? Senate Minority Leader Mitch McConnell has said he's not convinced. The debate's going to be happening in his body there in terms of the Senate. What's the political calculation there?
Well, just as with Speaker Boehner, this is an especially thorny situation for McConnell, which I think explains why he's been so hesitant so far to announce where he stands. Naturally, as the Senate Minority Leader, you need to think long and hard before you buck the president on a matter of this kind of consequence. But in his case, he also has to factor in that unlike House leaders or Harry Reid, his counterpart in the Senate, there's another factor at play when it comes to Mitch McConnell, and that is that he's got a very tough reelection campaign coming up next year. And he's already got a Republican primary opponent who's taken a very strong stand against military strikes.
So, Charlie, we've been talking about the political calculus going on in Congress, but really, really, the question is, what's at stake for the president? What if he can't get the votes he needs and is looking for a Syria war resolution?
Well, there's a very lively debate about that going on right now about exactly what it means if he doesn't get the votes. And there is, of course, the question of what it does to undermine the president's second-term agenda and his credibility going forward. But then there's the more immediate question of whether he goes forward with strikes in the absence of a congressional authorization. The administration has signaled already that it believes it has the constitutional authority to act without congressional authorization. But if it does, as we heard some Republicans voice it last week, that risks creating a constitutional crisis. So all of a sudden, you know, you've got a lot of bad options and very high stakes for the president.
Charlie, a moment or two ago, you said that Congress men and women have been hearing from their constituents. Stand by for just a second, because, Jeremy, you spoke with some of those very constituents, some people in Chicago over the weekend.
That's right. I was in downtown Chicago on Michigan Avenue, which is always filled with tourists and Chicagoans alike. And I asked some people what they thought President Obama should do. Let me just first get your name.
I'm Nancy McNally.
Are you from Chicago?
Yes.
So are you following this closely, and what do you think the president should do? Should the United States strike against Syria?
You know, I really don't think they should. It's a hard problem for him, and it's an awful thing to see all those people in refugee camps, but I don't think that that's the answer either.
Why not?
Because it could probably harm more people like we did when we went into Iraq and killed people that were innocent people. So it's just a huge problem, but it should not be the way it's resolved.
Better for the U.S. to stay out of it.
Exactly.
And one more question. Congress is coming back in this week. Do you think, what would be the number one issue for you that they should be dealing with?
Well, probably this vote that they have to take, but they seem pretty useless, so I don't know what will happen.
Let me get your name first.
Teresa.
And your last name?
Young.
Are you from Chicago?
No, I'm not. I'm from Mississippi.
From Mississippi. What city?
Jackson, Mississippi.
Right. So what do you think? Do you think that the U.S. should be striking against Syria?
If it's necessary for us to strike against Syria, then we should do what we have to do in order to protect our country.
Have you been following it closely?
Somewhat, but sometimes I get off, you know, get off balance and everything. But hopefully the first president of the United States knows exactly what he's doing.
Congress is also coming back into session this week, and I wonder, what would you say is the number one issue for you that they should be dealing with right now?
As far as, you know, let's take care of home. A lot of kids are homeless here. Education need to be beefed up. Focus on that. Let's focus on home and the health care.
Great. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Nancy Cannon from Orem, Utah.
So have you been following it closely, and what do you think President Obama should do about Syria?
I have been following it very closely. I don't think we should be going. It's none of our business. There are some issues, but I feel like we need to stay out of it. We're not there for a civil war, and I don't think he should strike.
What about the case that they're making, though, that there's a red line on chemical weapons, they shouldn't be used, and therefore the United States should intervene?
Yeah, there is a red line, but my whole thing is what about what happened in Iraq and what happened in Afghanistan? I mean, all of those things were the same. So I don't feel that we should be intervening.
Syria aside, as Congress comes back this week, what is the number one issue you would like them to be working on?
Obamacare and defunding it.
Defunding it?
Defunding it.
Tom Bevier.
And are you from Chicago?
No, I'm actually from Boston.
So are you following this closely, and what do you think the president should be doing at this point on Syria? Should we strike?
I have been, you know, following it a little bit. I mean, I think he should kind of gauge the public's opinion a little bit more. My personal opinion at this time is probably not to strike.
Do you think that if Congress votes no, he should do it anyway, or should he not do it if they vote no?
If they vote no, I would say definitely not.
As they come back into session this week, what would you say is the number one issue for you that you would like Congress to be working on?
I feel like there's so many issues. I really don't know where to begin. I mean, education, budget, environment. I mean, there's so many different issues. I feel like diving into a new war is probably not our biggest concern at this point, just coming out of two other ones.
So there you have it, Meghna. Some people in downtown Chicago, a lot of skepticism about the idea of a strike. And even Syrian President Assad, talking with CBS News, did talk about the poll numbers in this country.
I think the most important part of this now is, let's say, the American people. But the polls show that the majority now don't want a war anywhere, not only against Syria.
So, Charlie Mattesian, what do you make of that? The polling does reflect that, and it appears that if Congress votes no, it's going to reflect what many people in this country are saying.
Right. The heavy resistance in Congress simply mirrors the polling that's out there. We've seen that the share of Americans who oppose U.S. airstrikes in Syria has been pretty high. And Pew Research, I understand it, is going to report again today that those numbers have surged from 48% to 63% opposed. And so all of a sudden, the numbers are just reflected in what the members are telling us in terms of their response from constituents back home in their districts.
Charlie, a couple minutes ago, we talked about the place that Republicans find themselves in Congress. But what about Democrats? I mean, for them in particular, it seems as if they're going to have to strike a balance or choose between the wishes of their constituents and that of the president.
I think you're exactly right. Democrats are in a very tough spot here. There was one Democratic member of Congress last week who represents one of the strongest pro-Obama districts in the nation, and he said that his constituent emails and phone calls were running 95% to 97% opposed. And that's in a heavy pro-Obama district. And so all of a sudden, you've got Democratic members of Congress who are caught in this vice where their districts are vehemently opposed, but they don't want to do anything that's going to damage the president in political terms. So for them, it's a very, very perilous vote in many ways.
Yeah, you know, I think one of the things that was most revealing in the conversations that Jeremy had with people in Chicago over the weekend was that there's the entire rest of the business of the nation that's been put on hold over this Syria debate. So what does all this mean for immigration reform, for the debt ceiling, for the budget?
Right. That's a critical point to make, because all of a sudden this is creating a kind of train wreck scenario where you've got very little time left in the year to get a ton of very important consequential legislative business done. For example, you've got the government funding measure that's got to get done by October 1st to prevent a shutdown. You've got the launch of Obamacare exchanges. You've got farm bill expiration, debt ceiling, sequester. And it's hard to see how all that gets done because there are only a limited number of days on the legislative calendar to get all that done. And probably something like immigration gets pushed out of the way as a result of this.
NPR's Charlie Mattesi. And Charlie, great to talk to you. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Funding for Here and Now comes from GEICO, protecting drivers and their families with insurance coverage for over 75 years. More at geico.com or 1-800-947-AUTO.